Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Mark, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Good. Well, we're going to talk about mental health. Haven't talked about mental health in a little bit of time. Just bring the listeners back to 2007 when the U.S. Food and Drug Administration issued a warning that teenagers should be informed about the risk of becoming suicidal during initial treatment with, at that point, any antidepressant drug. The FDA also said that we as clinicians should monitor patients closely, and that depression and certain other serious psychiatric disorders are themselves associated with increased risk of suicide, reminding us that sometimes it's a little bit hard to tease all of this apart. Since then, the manufacturers have gone to war trying to convince us that this really isn't anything real. It does seem that there's some weak evidence. It's not robust that the treatment of depressed patients with antidepressant drugs does increase suicidality, meaning, you know, suicide ideation, action to prepare for a suicide. Again, the data is weak, and it also appears, to my reading, to suggest that it's not across all age groups. For whatever reason, this does appear to be strongest in the 18 to 24-year-old age group. The question then is with this age group, you know, there are lots of choices of drugs, right? There's SSRIs and serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors and tricyclics and MAOIs and other antidepressants. So we're sort of in a position, we've got this sort of potpourri of different drugs. And the clinical question is, are some of these antidepressants safer than others, particularly with regard to suicide risk? You found an article from the BMJ published in 2015, starts it's in volume 350, and I have no idea what page it's on because it's one of these cryptic notes. I guess it may start on page 517. I don't know what H means, but
yeah, I know they've really ruined the whole thing. Yeah, I could pull it up here in a second. I've got it open, but in any case, it's in the BMJ February 18th issue.
Okay,
and yeah, this is interesting. I mean, this is an important question. There's so many choices of drugs for psychiatric illness, and I think there's a well documented history of bias in the literature and of experts with extensive ties to industry and, you know, articles written and ghostwritten. And, you know, it's sometimes hard to get at the truth. And, you know, you mentioned the issues around adolescent suicide, and there were suppression of research where there were articles not published because they showed an increase in suicidality in adolescents. And so there's just this whole sordid history, and I'm always a little bit skeptical of literature that comes out of that world. And this one, I think, though, is different because it's really written by folks who are focused on primary care. They're primary care researchers. They're not necessarily totally focused on psychiatry. Hippisley Cox, who's the lead author, has done work on ovarian cancer screening. So I know they use this Q Research database for a lot of different things. Anyway, long intro, but basically they had data on 12 million patients from 600 general practices, and they found over 200,000 with a new diagnosis of depression. Almost 90% got a prescription for an antidepressant. Mostly they got an SSRI, 71%. They were treated for an average of about 220 days, so, you know, 7 months or so, 7 or 8 months, which seems typical. I think, you know, that kind of resonates with me in terms of typical primary care practice here as well. And so what they looked for was, during the first 5 years of follow-up, they identified 198 cases of suicide and 5,243 cases of attempted suicide or self-harm. So these are, you know, needle in a haystack kind of things, but they're obviously devastating when they happen. And it's a very difficult thing, even in a good-sized trial with 500 people, to be able to figure out which drug leads to more suicidality or certainly completed suicide. They're just such rare events. And so what they found, I think consistent with what we know, is that the greatest risk of suicide is in the first 28 days of treatment. you know, classically we talk about patients being activated and being so depressed they can't act on their suicidal ideation, but as they become more activated, become start feeling better, they can, you know, develop the ability, unfortunately, to in some cases attempt suicide. There were quite a range of risks of suicide. It was as low as 0.02% for amitriptyline, and amitriptyline really had some of the lowest rates of suicide compared to 0.19% for Remeron or mirtazapine, which had the highest rate. And remember, we were always telling patients, you know, or we were always taught, well, you can't use tricyclics because people can kill themselves with their tricyclics, right? But it turns out they have the lowest rate of suicide with amitriptyline. So that I think is a real insight there. There was no difference in suicide rates or rates of attempted suicide or self-harm between patients treated with SSRIs and tricyclics overall. Compared with, so you take citalopram, Effexor as a, citalopram's Effexor, right?
No, I think.
Celexa.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I tend to think, you know, I tend to think in terms of generics. But yeah, so take a typical SSRI, and when they compared venlafaxine, which is Effexor.
Exactly right.
Which is an SNRI, okay, a selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, an SNRI rather than SSRI, they had a significantly higher, 3.7 was the hazard ratio for suicide, and venlafaxine was, that was for mirtazapine, venlafaxine was a hazard ratio of 2.2. So just to kind of summarize that bit of a jumble there, as compared with citalopram, rates of suicide were significantly increased with mirtazapine and venlafaxine between two roughly and fourfold. Other studies have shown similar suicide rates within the groups of SSRIs and tricyclics, but it does raise a concern about some of these newer agents and the ones specifically that are targeting the noradrenergic receptor. Mirtazapine is what we call a noradrenergic and specific serotonergic antidepressant, so kind of like an SNRI. And so it may be that that has a, perhaps a greater activation. It may lead to some better improvements in symptoms, but it appears to also be at least associated with a greater risk of completed suicide.
Right. I think all of this also needs to be placed in the context of that while there are great differences in side effect profiles from different classes of drugs and within a class between different drugs, that at least to my reading, there's none of these that come out as a winner in terms of effectiveness. I mean, they all are about equally effective, right?
That's right. That's right. And it really has more to do with tolerability, cost, you know, side effects, those kind of things, simplicity, safety. And, you know, when you talk about the safety issue, I think you have to be, you know, a little cautious before using the mirtazapine and venlafaxine, the Remeron and Effexor. And then trazodone also was associated with a higher risk, along with those two, of attempted suicide or self-harm, not completed suicide. And in terms of the risks for attempted suicide or self-harm, they were lower significantly for amitriptyline. So, yeah, I think good information. This is a really large, well-constructed GP database. And they've, you know, produced a lot of interesting and useful results in the past. And, you know, like I said, we're not going to get a large enough randomized controlled trial that'll tell us about the effect on suicide rates. And this is something we're going to have to study with observational databases where they try to adjust for differences between patients.
Yeah, 12 million patients is no slouchy sample size.
Yeah.
Mark, thanks. We'll talk with you again next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Mike.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.